Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
District hires Associate Super. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees voted 6-0 to approve Anthony Sorolla as Associate Superintendent of Operations. Sorolla, who was okay during a Tuesday night workshop, replaces Stephanie Howard, who is now superintendent of Crane ISD. Sorolla joins ECISD after 6 years as assistant superintendent roles. The board recap said, the past 2 years as assistant superintendent of human resources for Donna ISD and 4 prior years as assistant superintendent of administrative services in Lufkin ISD. 12 of his 21 years in education have come as administrator. Sorolla began his career in 2001 as a bilingual teacher in Dallas ISD. He holds a bachelor's degree from Rice University, a master's of education from the University of Texas at Arlington, and earned his doctorate from UT Austin, where he was a fellow in the UT Cooperative Superintendency Program, the recap said. An evaluation of opportunity culture conducted by Texas Tech University indicates that the program is working well in Ector County ISD, especially during a pandemic year. According to the presentation, students perform better on standardized tests when taught by teachers in the Opportunity Culture program. The district implemented Opportunity Culture to provide equitable access to excellent instructions for all students, recruit and retain excellent teachers, and provide all teachers with excellent development and advanced career opportunities. The key to opportunity culture is the multi-classroom leader, a teacher who heads a campus team and not only serves students, but provides daily support and coaching to members of that campus team. ECISD implemented opportunity culture at 8 schools during the 2020-21 school year, and now 17 schools are using the model in the 2021-22 school year, the recap detailed. At the end of last school year, ECISD asked Texas Tech University researchers to conduct an independent review of the program and its effectiveness. Those researchers, Alexander Wiseman, Jessica Gottlieb, and Jacob Kirksey, presented findings to trustees. The researchers observed the MCL's pedagogy and learning managing and leading. They performed a quantitative analysis of student classroom outcomes, and they conducted a series of interviews with those involved in opportunity culture. The researchers received data for more than 20,000 ECISD students, including STAR assessment for 3rd through 8th grades. The key takeaways were that opportunity culture teaching models appear to correlate to positive, immediate academic gains for students in ECISD, with the associations most pronounced in reading assessments, and for students with limited English proficiency and those considered at risk. And the multitude of these gains are significant. Association of having an MCL or a team teacher is equivalent to replacing the average ECISD teacher with an ECISD teacher in the top quadrille, the recap said. ECISD had 27 multi-classroom leaders during the 2020-21 school year that reached an average of 72% of students on those opportunity culture campuses, a total of 7,121 students. Now, ECISD has 59 MCLs across the 17 opportunity culture schools. A third set of opportunity culture schools is in the planning stage, targeted to begin using this strategic staff structure through the 2022-23 school year. The recap said Wiseman closed the presentation by telling trustees that their job as evaluators is to be critical, and they don't often come across so many glowing remarks, which suggests the program has value at this time. The board also heard presentations on the 2021-22 campus improvement plans. Each school, regardless of rating, is required to build a campus improvement plan to serve as the blueprint for how it will uniquely address campus-specific needs, the recap said. Plans are aligned with the district's vision, strategic plan, and district improvement plan. These plans will be on next week's meeting agenda for approval by the trustees. Trustees discussed revisions on board policy, DEC, local compensation and benefits, leaves and absences. Proposed changes to this policy reflect recent changes in the law that give peace officers a maximum of 3 days of mental health leave per traumatic event experienced in the scope of their employment. Additionally, peace officers are granted quarantine leave when ordered by the local health authorities or the peace officer supervisor to quarantine, isolate due to possible or known exposure to a communicable disease while on duty, HB 2073. The item will be brought back to the board next week for vote. COVID by the numbers. COVID in the Permian Basin. Ector County, 23,180 total cases, 444 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 24 students, 6 staff. Midland County, 24,054 total cases, 311 deaths. Texas, 3,870,934 total cases, 60,423 deaths. U.S. cases, 41,426,425 total confirmed and 662,620 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. MCH daily COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital's daily COVID inpatient numbers as of 9 a.m. Wednesday, 81 total COVID patients in-house, MEG-Surg non-critical, 54 COVID patients, 37 unvaccinated, 15 vaccinated, 2 unknown, includes 1 on pediatrics, critical care, 27, COVID patients, 22 on ventilator, 24 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 0 unknown. Of the 22 COVID patients on ventilator, 3 are vaccinated, 19 are unvaccinated. Age ranges of COVID patients 16 to 89 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Andrews, 1 from Crane, 2 from Hobbs, New Mexico, 4 from Midland. The rest are from Odessa, Ector County. Quick hits, black and white ball. Odessa Arts will honor the 2021 Friends of the Arts recipient, Betsy and Buzz Hurt, Sonia and Toby Eoff, and Mike Marrero during the Black and White Ball at 6:30 p.m. Friday at the Downtown Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, Permian Ballroom, 305 East 5th Street. There will be dinner, dancing, Casino Royale, and more. Tickets and sponsorships are available at odessaarts.org. For more information, call 337-1492 or email asst@odessaarts.org. Performances. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, has scheduled the following events. Doors open an hour before the show starts. Friday, 8 p.m., Raymond Orta y Los Barrio Boys of Comedy. Saturday, 8 p.m., Maricela. September 27th, 7:30 p.m., The Monkey's Farewell Tour with Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. For tickets or for information, visit WagnerNoel.com. Permian Basin Heart Walk. the American Heart Association has scheduled the Permian Basin Heart Walk to celebrate heart and stroke survivors, raise life-saving funds, and encourage physical activity Saturday at the Medical Center Hospital Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 Texas Highway 191. Registration is at 8 a.m. and the walk starts at 9 a.m. The funds raised from the Permian Basin Heart Walk go toward research, advocacy, CPR training, and to promote better health in support of the association's 2024 Health Equity Impact Goal, reducing barriers to health care access and quality. Visit www.2heart.org to learn more. To register and give, visit PermianBasinHeartWalk.org. Pink the Basin Benefit, Saving True Pairs, One Mammogram at a Time. Ninth Annual Sporting Clays event will benefit Pink the Basin October 8th at Jake's. 13301 FM 1379 Midland. A raffle for Browning Satori Field Sporting Grade 7 Shotgun will also be held. Tickets are $20 each. All proceeds raised for Saving True Pairs and Pink the Basin stay in the Permian Basin. Sponsorships are available. To donate, register, sponsorship, or more information, visit tinyurl.com/3x6wah46. MCH receives Stroke Gold Plus Award. A press release detailed that Medical Center Hospital has received the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association's Get With The Guidelines, Stroke Gold Plus Quality Achievement Award. The award recognizes MCH's commitment to ensure stroke patients receive the most appropriate treatment according to nationally recognized research-based guidelines based on the latest scientific evidence. MCH earned the award by meeting specific measures for the diagnosis and treatment of stroke patients at a set level for a designated period. These measures include evaluation of the proper use of medications and other stroke treatments aligned with the most up-to-date evidence-based guidelines with the goal of speeding recovery and reducing death and disability for stroke patients. Before discharge, patients should also receive education on managing their health, get a follow-up visit scheduled, as well as other care transition interventions. Medical Center Hospital is honored to be recognized as the American Heart Association for our dedication to helping our patients have the best quality chance of survival after a stroke, said Christian Timmons, Chief Nursing Officer, Medical Center Health System. Get With The Guidelines Stroke makes it easier for our teams to put proven knowledge and guidelines to work on a daily basis to improve outcomes for stroke patients. We are pleased to recognize Medical Center Hospital for their commitment to stroke care, said Lee H. Schwamm, MD, National Chairperson of the Quality Oversight Committee and Executive Vice Chair of Neurology, Director of Acute Stroke Services, Massachusetts General Hospital, Boston, Massachusetts. Research has shown that hospitals adhering to clinical measures through the Get With The Guidelines Quality Improvements Initiative can often see fewer readmissions and lower mortality rates. According to the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, stroke is the number 5 cause of death and a leading cause of adult disability in the United States. On average, someone in the U.S. suffers a stroke every 40 seconds, and nearly 795,000 people suffer a new or recurrent stroke each year. New exhibits opening at Ellen Noel Art Museum. The Ellen Noel Art Museum issued a press release about its new exhibit, Finding Alice, an illustrated look at Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, opening 6 p.m. today. Receptions for two exhibits, Finding Alice and Audubon's Quadrupeds, consist of drinks, hors d'oeuvres, music by Funky Pocket, and viewings of the exhibits. Finding Alice includes 35 different versions of the book, including how different artists have illustrated this classic book. The viewing continues until January 2nd, 2022. Artists for the exhibit include Salvador Dali, Barry Moser, John Tenney, Andrea De Aquino, and David De La Mar. Since the first publication of Alice's Adventure in Wonderland, the books have been translated into 176 languages. Audubon's Quadrupeds is a publication of the Birds of America, which earned John James Audubon 1785 to 1851 worldwide fame, and he became interested in a new large-scale project. This viewing continues until January 16, 2022. In the early 1840s, he began working on the Viviparous Quadrupeds of North America with the help of his son, John Woodhouse Audubon. Many of the animals portrayed had never before been depicted or seen outside of their native habitat. In the breathtaking color and detail that was his trademark, this exhibit is on loan from the Lee Silliman Engraving Collection. Childcare obstacles aired at ECAN. Childcare cost and availability, as well as what childcare workers are paid, was part of the discussion during Wednesday's Zoom Early Childhood Action Network meeting. ECAN is an offshoot of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. "I really think one of the elephants in the room is childcare," said Susan Lara, a grant writer for Ector County ISD. "There have been some child cares closed down, and there have been some child cares that are not operating at full capacity. People can't go to work if they don't have child care and they have young children. So I think that's one of the reasons that we have some shortages of workers across the community, because I really think we have to look at the issue of child care and how we offer that to our employees." Becca Myers of the Education Partnership said, "What they continue to hear is that organizations have the capacity to grow, but they don't have the human capital for it." Laura said fingerprinting was a barrier at one point. "No childcare in Odessa could get fingerprinting done for a while. If you can't get paid until you get fingerprinted and you can't get fingerprinted, you're going to think about doing something else," Laura said. "There's a big dilemma in there with services and stuff." She added that the pay isn't there for child care workers. Meyer said she was in a webinar where chambers of commerce nationwide discussed the business aspects of child care. Laura said it's helpful if people can get educated and up in their careers. Mercedes Ojeda, assistant program director of First Five at University of Texas Permian Basin, said they aim to improve early childhood education in Ector and Midland counties. They can serve 459 families, and they are now fully staffed. On an early childhood-related topic, Denise McCowan of Midland College shared that they are planning to expand their pre-kindergarten academy. "When we opened Pre-K Academy 2 years ago, the vision was much bigger than just a pre-K academy that was going to serve 68 kids. Which is what we serve now. We have been in the process of trying to get a plan for a building ready to go for a pre-K academy that can serve 288 kids, 3- and 4-year-olds. Dr. Damon Kennedy is working on funding for that. They are planning to expand to 16 classrooms. McCowan said Kennedy, who is vice president of instructional services at MC, reported Wednesday that they are close to where they needed to be funding-wise. "The first floor of that building will be our pre-K academy," McCowan said. "The second floor will be our educational division with college classrooms, as well as a lecture hall where we can hold not just our college classes, but also professional development for the community through childcare and through certified teachers. We are working on that because we are in the process of writing a bachelor's degree for early childhood education. We have approval to open that to start our bachelor's degree next fall in early childhood education. We are in the process of getting our applications together for an education preparation program through TEA, the Texas Education Agency, so we can provide those services to get teachers to be certified teachers, she added. They are planning to expand to 16 classrooms.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the inside pages from the Odessa American, Thursday, September 16th. Student applications for IDEA now open. IDEA Public Schools in Permian Basin is now accepting applications for the 2022-23 school year at IDEA UConn. IDEA UConn Academy and College Preparatory first opened in 2021 and currently serves nearly 450 students. For the 2022-23 school year, this brand new campus will serve students in grades kindergarten through 3rd and 6th through 7th grade. The campus will grow to serve grades K through 12 when fully scaled. At IDEA, we take immense pride in ensuring every student is prepared to get to and through college, said Bethany Solis, Executive Director for IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin. But what we are most proud of is creating a team and family at all of our campuses. We work closely with families and communities to give students the best opportunities to achieve success. The tuition-free public school organization focuses on personalized learning, core subjects, critical thinking, and college preparedness. IDEA's expert teachers partner with students and families every step of the way to ensure students are prepared for success in college and life. For the past 15 years, 100% of its students have achieved college acceptance and have matriculated to college. The deadline to submit application to attend IDEA UConn for the 2022-23 school year is 11:59 p.m., February 18th. Parents can submit an application at their website. A random lottery will be held February 19, 2022 to determine which students will fill spots available at each IDEA school. If randomly selected, you will be notified and invited to attend a Welcome to IDEA event where we celebrate your acceptance to IDEA and orient you to IDEA's culture, curriculum, and expectations, a news release said. Students who are not randomly selected to attend IDEA will be placed on a wait list, and the order of the waiting list will be randomly determined. The applications of students on the wait list will remain on file for the remainder of the 2022-23 school year. If a spot becomes available, students will be selected from the wait list, and parents will be notified of their selection and informed of the next step. Applications for IDEA Travis and Midland will open in early December via Apply Midland, midlandisd.net/domain/7296. Next year, IDEA Travis will serve students in grades pre-K through 8th grade. Downtown development faces challenges in Odessa, by Federico Martinez. The lack of developers participating in a downtown master plan town hall session on Wednesday exposed perhaps the city's greatest challenge to developing downtown. Developers have no interest in the idea, Kimley Horn, Vice President Jeff Whitaker, acknowledged during the meeting. About 30 local developers were invited to participate in a Zoom town hall meeting to discuss downtown development ideas, but none did so. We need to get more housing and retail downtown, but the challenge is attracting developers, Whitaker told about two dozen town hall participants, which included community and business leaders and interested residents. They didn't join us today, but we'll continue to reach out to developers. Sandra Eoff, co-owner of Op Partner Incorporated and E-Official Enterprises Incorporated, the company that spearheaded the downtown Marriott Hotel and Convention Center project, said many developers are not yet convinced that they can make money downtown. I think many developers are waiting to see if they can make money, Eoff said during the Zoom town hall. We do have room for shopping centers and restaurants. They can make money. But Eoff said she believes the city may have to court developers outside Odessa because local developers don't see the potential. Initially, Eoff said she wanted to pursue other downtown development projects, but the hotel was a big investment and COVID-19 has slowed down their plans. "We did have a developer that wanted to put in more housing, but they wanted to use our money to do it," Eoff said. "Nobody I know of is interested in downtown development." Craig Stoker, chairman of the city's Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone, said he believes the city's best chance for success is to create a downtown that includes a mixture of housing, restaurants, retail businesses, and a variety of events and activities. But even Stoker, known for his optimistic nature, acknowledged that "we have not yet figured out a way to attract investment." Several residents and current downtown business owners suggested that the city needs to develop a stronger marketing plan that showcases the opportunities downtown can offer. Updating downtown maps and listing the strengths that already exist downtown, like a great art scene, might persuade new developers, said Natalie Tiller, a San Jose, California designer who previously lived in Odessa. Tiller is co-owner of the designing firm Lujo Collective. "I think the city needs better marketing and branding," Tiller said. Realtor John Harridge, whose Copper Key Realty business is located downtown, agreed. "The city hasn't done a lot of marketing of available land parcels downtown," Harridge said. "I think the other problem we face is there are a lot of naysayers about downtown. They just want to cause problems and complain about it without getting involved in changing things." Kimley Horn hosted a series of 9 town hall meetings, which concluded on Wednesday. Each session focused on different downtown topics, such as parking, land use, activities and public events, and streetscaping and walkability. Whitaker said the consulting firm's next step is to compile and review all the feedback received this week and then share it with city officials. Consultants will then begin working with the city officials to prioritize goals and develop strategies to reach their objectives. The city council in June voted unanimously to hire planning and design architects Kimley Horn to oversee the updating of the plan. The firm is being paid $85,000 for their work. Whitaker has said the project will take about 6 months to complete. Husband and wife charged with assaulting each other. A 38-year-old man and his 36-year-old wife were arrested after they assaulted each other. Gabriel Hernandez, 38, was charged with assault to family or household member by impeding breathing or circulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. While Topazio Natividad, 36, was charged with assault, family violence, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported assaults happened at 3:25 a.m. September 14th in the 1300 block of East 51st Street, an Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. Hernandez reportedly told police he woke up his wife to confront her about inappropriate texts. He stated things blew up and she attacked him and he had to throw her off of him multiple times, but didn't provide a clear explanation for the series of physical events that happened between them. Police saw that Hernandez had multiple bite marks on his right arm, the middle of his back, scratches on his head, arms, and chest, a busted bloody mouth, and red marks on his body, the affidavit stated. Natividad reportedly had a bloody right pinky finger from her fake nail, scratches on her arms, right neck, and back. She stated that she awoke to Hernandez hitting her and that he choked her to the point she couldn't breathe. Therefore, she defended herself. Natividad also couldn't verbally provide a clear explanation for the series of physical events. Jasmine Miranda, the eldest daughter of Natividad, stated she saw them both equally physically fighting each other, and Natividad tried to get her phone away from Hernandez, the affidavit stated. Hernandez and Natividad were each arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Hernandez has one bond totaling $6,000, and he was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Natividad had one bond totaling $2,500, and she posted bail on Wednesday. state-owned land in Brewster and Hudspeth counties to be leased to Border Patrol. Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush announced Wednesday that the General Land Office has entered into lease agreements with the United States Customs and Border Protection, CBP. Under these agreements, Border Patrol will be allowed to use state-owned land for communications and patrolling operations. President Biden continues to ignore the humanitarian crisis at our doorstep, even as federal agents risk their safety and lives every day as they confront this disaster, Bush said in a news release. The GLO will continue to do everything in its power to assist our brave Border Patrol agents, mitigate the effects of this crisis, and secure our border. Per the lease agreements, a tract of land in Brewster County is set aside for use of a helicopter landing site, while the other in Hudspeth County will be used for a tactical command network system communication facility, the release said. Through July 2021, CBP recorded over 1.3 million illegal crossings this fiscal year, even without the official totals for August and September. This number is nearly three times the total for all of fiscal year 2020. Media reports continue to show increasing confrontations with local law enforcement, endangering lives and causing damage to property.
Obituary, Russell Harrington, Jr., Odessa, Texas. Russell Albert Harrington, Jr. arrived to bless this earth on August 1, 1936 in Detroit, Michigan, and on September 8, 2021, when he was 85 years old, God said, "Your work on earth is done. Well done, good and faithful servant." Russ was preceded in death by his parents, Russell Albert Harrington, Sr. and Mary Emma Baker Harrington, his sister Mary Adams, and brother Geol Harrington. He is survived by his wife Sarah, Odessa, Texas, sister Nancy, and her husband Rick Zinn, Centennial, Colorado, brother-in-law Roy Adams and his wife Sue, Arab, Alabama, daughter Deborah and her husband Gary Young, Abilene, Texas, and son Lance and his wife Lori Harrington, Amarillo, Texas. He has four grandchildren, April Dawn Young, Newton, Daniel, Alma, Colorado, Brian Young, Catherine, Abilene, Texas, Heath Harrington, Chelsea, Amarillo, Texas, and Blake Harrington, Jordan, Midlothian, Texas. He also has six great-grandchildren, Kinsey, Braley, William, McCoy, Claire, and Miles, who will join the family in December. He also has an honoree granddaughter, Renelle Garner. Services will be Saturday, September 18th, 2021. 10 a.m. at Memorial Service will be at Belmont Baptist Church in Odessa, Texas. 3 o'clock p.m. a graveside service will be at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Lubbock, Texas, where full military honors will be given. Brian Adams Contreras, Odessa. Brian Adam Contreras, 19 of Odessa, Texas, died Sunday, September 5th, 2021 in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, September 17th, 2021 at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Father Joe Babieri is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Sherry Lee Davis, Anna, Texas. Sherry Lee Davis, 52, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 14, 2021, in Anna, Texas. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 18, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Juan Blas Rivera, Midland. Juan Blas Rivera, 48, died Saturday, September 4, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Billy Farrell Winkler, Odessa. Billy Farrell Winkler, 93, of Odessa, died Tuesday, September 14, 2021 in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. September 18th, 2021 at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Aubrey Jones is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
The Maverick Players have rescheduled Brothers, a comedy by Dave Williams. The McLaren Comedy Competition winner in 1996. Three unhappy brothers at a mandatory family reunion. Contains adult language. Friday and Saturday, September 17th and 18th. Fun Monday, September 20th. Friday and Saturday, September 24th and 25th. Sunday matinee, September 26th. Curtain, 7:30, with a matinee at 2:30. All tickets, $10. At the VFW Post 4149, 409 Veterans Air Park Drive. New, very cool air conditioning. Reservations, 432-260-0044. Or tickets available at the door.
From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, September 16th. ECISD's supply of COVID-19 tests expire, by Caitlin Randall. Ector County ISD is currently not doing COVID-19 testing for staff or students after their supply of tests expired over the weekend, Superintendent Scott Murray said during a call with reporters Wednesday. Murray said they've ordered additional tests and are waiting on them to be shipped from the state. Many districts' tests expired at the same time, causing delays in shipments, he said. The state has millions of tests available. We're just waiting on that shipment, much like other districts across the state, he said. All of those tests expired at the same time, and so we are all waiting on new tests from the state. The district's inability to do COVID-19 testing has caused the number of reported cases to drop, he said. The number of positive cases district-wide fell from 40 to 60 a day a week last week to about 30 a day this week. The positive cases the district is continuing to report this week are coming from local doctors or parents who are self-reporting, according to Murray. We know because we have been testing students and staff members every single day at school, that our inability to do that right now has resulted in lower test numbers, he said. Murray said they do not yet know when a new shipment of tests will arrive. Even before the COVID-19 tests expired, ECISD's positive cases were on a downward trend. Murray said positives dropped from a high of 110 cases in one day 2 weeks ago to about 80 cases a day, then down to 40 to 60 cases a day last week. Some of the highest reported cases have been at Permian High School and Odessa High School, where 189 cases and 180 cases have been reported since August 4th, respectively. Murray also said on Wednesday that they are not requiring vaccines for staff after President Biden's sweeping vaccine mandates last week, which included a rule that any company with more than 100 employees must require vaccines. That rule would have been enforced through regulations from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Since Texas does not have a state OSHA plan, those regulations can't be enforced for Texas school districts. At this time, we're continuing to monitor decisions that are made at both the state and federal level, but as of today, there have been no changes in our protocols, Murray said. A Midland ISD spokesperson did not immediately respond to a reporter telegram inquiry regarding the status of the district's COVID-19 testing supply. MISD's positive cases have also been trending downward, from 348 cases reported the week of August 30th to 162 cases reported last week. MC Honor Society makes donation to MMH employees, from staff reports. Midland College Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society students gathered up support for Midland Health employees directly dealing with COVID-19 patients. Three of the chapter officers, including me, are emergency medical scribes at the hospital and see firsthand how the staff is working around the clock to deal with the crisis. Marisol Terran, PTK Vice President of Service and MC Student, said. Even more of our members have family who work at Midland Health, and they know the toll the virus is taking on their loved ones. I hope this fundraiser can show the medical staff our appreciation for their service during this pandemic. The PTK students started a fundraiser at the end of August with the goal of supplying 110 Midland Health employees with boxed lunches. Students, faculty, and staff answered the call, raising more than $1,880. Jason's Deli is partnering with special pricing, so the students were able to use the extra money to purchase $10 gift cards to Starbucks to keep Midland Health employees going. PTK is the International Honor Society for two-year colleges. It recognizes and encourages scholarship by providing opportunities for leadership development and service. Identical Triplets to Perform as Taylor Red at Wagner Noel by J.C. Lewis. Live on stage, Permian Basin is bringing the pop country sibling trio Taylor Red to Midland. The concert will be at 7:30 p.m. October 5th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $40. Taylor Red consists of identical triplet sisters, Nika, Natalie, and Nicole Taylor. They are singers, songwriters, composers, and multi-instrumentalists who play guitar, banjo, fiddle, and mandolin, according to a news release. Taylor Red has performed at more than 1,000 live shows across America and internationally in countries such as Norway and Canada. The band was featured in a national ad campaign for Sonic Drive-In in 2020. Its repertoire is influenced by the musical giants that paved the way for them, such as Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, Tom Petty, and the Eagles. The trio released a single, Country Money, in March of this year. Other popular songs include Bringing Country Back, Fresh Off the Farm, and What They Seem. Midland Reporter-Telegram Energy Page, published Thursday, September 16th. Oil rallies to six-week high as U.S. crude stockpiles tighten, by Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Oil jumped to the highest in 6 weeks amid signs of a rapidly tightening market after a U.S. government report showed a bigger-than-expected decline in crude stockpiles. Futures in New York surged 3.1% on Wednesday, and global benchmark Brent closed above $75 a barrel for the first time since July. U.S. crude supplies hit the lowest since September 2019 after falling by more than 6 million barrels, exceeding projections. The data followed the International Energy Agency's warning that recent supply lost from storms in the U.S. Gulf have offset what OPEC and its allies have added, and the world will have to wait until October for more barrels. There's not a lot of new crude supply coming to the market, so the market feels awfully tight, said Matt Sally, who helps manage about $8 billion at Tortoise. That will keep crude prices moving higher. COVID demand worries are taking a back seat for now. Prices have steadily climbed since late August and were given a further boost when Hurricane Ida shut down a chunk of U.S. Gulf Coast offshore oil production. Meanwhile, the latest analysis from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries shows a looming supply crunch in the summer of 2022. OPEC's analysts now see global oil demand increasing by 4.15 million barrels a day in 2022 compared to the level expected for this year, an upward revision of 860,000 barrels a day from what they forecast a month ago. U.S. supply restraints have caused Brent and WTI benchmark crude's so-called time spreads to strengthen. WTI crude for December delivery settled at $6.23 a barrel, higher than that for supply in the same month next year. That's the biggest premium in more than a month. The Energy Information Administration report also showed that national gasoline and distillate inventories each declined by nearly 2 million barrels. A sharper drop would have likely occurred had petroleum consumption not been affected by recent U.S. Gulf Coast storms. Additionally, Offshore natural gas production has been slow to recover since the recent storms, causing prices to rally. That might prompt power companies to use petroleum products such as fuel oil to run as feedstock in their plants, according to Sally. That will buoy crude prices even higher, he said. Oilfield service job growth slows as Delta variant surges, by Paul Takashi, Houston Chronicle. The U.S. oilfield services and equipment sector added the fewest jobs in 4 months, as a surge in COVID-19 infections appears to be slowing job growth nationally. Employment in the sector, dominated by companies like Halliburton, Schlumberger, and Baker Hughes, rose by an estimated 3,711 jobs, or 0.6% in August, the slowest rate since April, when sector employment rose by 1,352 jobs. Nationally, the U.S. economy in August created the fewest jobs in 7 months, as the Delta variant slowed hiring in many sectors, including restaurants, hospitality, and retail. Still, August was the oil field service sector's sixth straight month of growth, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics analyzed by Houston Trade Group Energy Workforce and Technology Council. The sector has recovered 42,200 of the 115,000 jobs that were lost last year during the pandemic. Employment reached a low in February at 591,413 jobs, down nearly 12% since the pandemic began in March 2020. The oil field services sector has been among the industry's hardest hit during the pandemic, which slashed demand for oil and products such as gasoline and jet fuel. Many exploration and production companies, which hire oil field services firms, stopped drilling new wells and halted production from existing wells for several months last year. During the worst period of pandemic-related cuts, oil field services companies slashed almost 57,300 jobs in April 2020, when crude prices fell into negative territory for the first time. It was the largest job loss recorded in the sector in a single month since at least 2013. The rollout of coronavirus vaccines has lifted local economies and travel, boosting demand for gasoline and jet fuel. U.S. drillers have added more than 250 rigs since the rig count fell to a low of 244 in August, according to oil field services firm Baker Hughes. There are more than 600,000 employees in the oil field services and equipment sector nationally, including 314,100 in Texas. The sector employed more than 725,000 jobs in December 2019, when the novel coronavirus was first reported in China. Airline passengers spent more in 2020, by Kyle Arnold, Dallas Morning News. Passengers are paying more to check bags and bolstering airline revenue with other spending outside the cost of tickets, even though the COVID-19 pandemic massively cut into air travel during the past 18 months. With ticket prices dropping to historic lows in 2020, Fort Worth-based American Airlines managed to get nearly $40 out of the average customer in bag fees, priority boarding, lounge usage, and credit card programs, according to the Car Trawler Yearbook of Ancillary Revenue by IdeaWorks Company. That's 15% more than in 2019, a relatively normal year for flying. Dallas-based Southwest Airlines brought in $46.63 from the average passenger, nearly 40% more than in 2019, according to IdeaWorks Company's data. Still, those ancillary fees brought in less total revenue for airlines than in non-COVID years because the number of passengers was way down. Ancillary fees dropped by more than 40% at both American and Southwest, along with other major airlines such as United and Delta. Even low-cost carrier Spirit Airlines, which thrived on leisure travelers and low fares in 2019, saw a 33% total drop. At American, that was a loss of more than $3.7 billion in revenue. But in a year when airlines struggled to stay afloat financially, IdeaWorks company founder Jay Sorensen was surprised that carriers didn't do more to get customers to upgrade seats, check extra bags, or board flights earlier. There was so much focus on airfares that no one really did anything different with fees, Sorensen said. It might have been a missed opportunity for discounts. For the past 18 months, airlines have been dealing with a wonky world in which previous passenger flying patterns provided little clarity on how upcoming months might play out. Travel numbers are still largely shaped by rapidly changing government restrictions in reaction to unpredictable surges in COVID-19 cases. Only in recent weeks have airlines begun reducing fall schedules, even after complaints of overcrowded airplanes and staff shortages in the summer. Still, ancillary fees and credit cards were a bright spot for airlines in an otherwise dismal 2020, when the financial livelihood of the industry was threatened and U.S. airlines totaled more than $35 billion in losses. American airlines turned to shipping cargo, furloughs, and layoffs to cut costs. Even with looser spending by some passengers, American lost $8.9 billion, despite nearly $6 billion in government grants to help cover employee payrolls. Even though baggage fees didn't go up at airlines, American Airlines passengers spent more than ever to check bags, about $10.15 per person, according to federal bag fee data. Even Southwest, which doesn't charge for the first two checked bags, made more money per passenger from bag fees. Credit card revenue emerged as a pandemic win for airlines because consumer spending remained hot, even when travel was subdued, Sorensen said. That means customers will have pent-up credit card airline miles on hand, which will turn into revenue when passengers book tickets, he said. It's a delicate balance, though, because the airline industry would have loved to have you redeem those airline miles in 2020 and early 2021 when there were far more empty seats and they were hurting for revenue, he said.
Pain of shingles can linger. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 78-year-old female and I am in my 10th week of shingles. I have them on my left chest and back at the bra line and on my upper arm. I cannot go anywhere because I can't stand when my clothes or bra touches me. I now have severe shooting pains on my arm area, mostly at night but also during the day. The rash on my chest, although mostly healed, is still very painful. I'm desperate for help. I use lidocaine, which helps for an hour or so. This is my second bout of shingles. I had them 10 years ago. I was wrongfully advised by my internist not to get the shingles vaccine after that last bout. Is there anything I can do? Answer. Shingles, also called herpes zoster, is caused by the reoccurrence of the chicken pox virus after years or decades of the virus being dormant. The herpes virus can escape the immune system during times of stress or simply as we age. Pain around the time of shingles is nearly universal, but the duration of time is variable. The type of pain you have now is caused by damage to the nerve and is called acute neuritis. Once the pain has lasted more than 4 months, the diagnosis of postherpetic neuralgia is made. Unfortunately, postherpetic neuralgia can last a very long time. For people over 65 with persistent active PHN, the average duration of symptoms was about 3.5 years. Treatment of acute zoster, preferably within 24 hours of the onset of rash, but certainly within 72 hours with antiviral medication, can help prevent PHN. At this point, pain medication is indicated. Some authorities would consider the use of prednisone. I recommend consulting with an expert, perhaps in pain management.
Here was the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, September 16th. Wife of 3 decades has never initiated intimacy. Dear Abby, after 28 years of marriage, is it strange that I would like my wife to initiate sex? I would like to know that she is interested, not just me. When I brought it up 3 weeks ago, her response again was, quote, "We can whenever you want to," end quote, which wasn't true because I have been turned down before. Any suggestions? She stays home all day and wants for nothing. Do you think she is getting it somewhere else? Signed, Frustrated in the Bedroom. Dear Frustrated, I hope your wife is intelligent enough to recognize a red flag when it's waved in front of her. I have a strong hunch that she isn't getting it somewhere else. It's more likely she no longer has a strong sex drive at this point in her life, or she may never have, or she may not know how to initiate and need coaching. If you can't teach her, enlist the aid of a sex therapist. Your doctor may be able to refer you to one. If you do, it may not only spice up, but save your marriage. Dear Abby, I live on the opposite coast from my family. During the pandemic, my youngest brother and his wife bought a new, very large house. He told me they had plenty of room, and the next time we come for a visit, they want us to stay with them. Well, that visit will be in November, but no invitation to stay has been extended. Should I remind my brother about his invitation, or should we just book a hotel? My gut instinct is to book the hotel, but my brother is very sensitive to how the family treats him, and I don't want to hurt his feelings. What should I do? Signed, Big Sis in California. Dear Big Sis, ask your brother if his offer still stands, since it has been some time since he extended his generous invitation. Listen carefully to his reaction. If you sense that he may have forgotten or the situation has changed because of COVID, tell him it would not be a problem for you to book accommodations at a hotel if it's more convenient. Doing this should not cause hurt feelings. Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married 32 years. We are still in love and consider each other our best friend. We survived some rough patches and learned how to make things right. I have one concern at this point in our journey. My wife constantly says, "I hate myself." The more she says it out loud, the more I see the impact on her emotionally. What can a partner do to help? I'm 100% supportive of all she does and totally attracted to her, yet I can't see this being healthy. Please help, and thanks. Signed, Dirty Words in Connecticut. Dear Dirty Words, the next time your wife tells you she hates herself, ask her why she is being so hard on herself and ask her to be specific about what it is she hates. Explain that you love her exactly as she is and worry that what she's doing isn't emotionally healthy. I agree, by the way. If she persists after that, suggest she make an appointment with a licensed mental health professional to discuss it.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.